You're listening to Discovering Multifamily, where we discuss all educational topics in commercial real estate with an emphasis on multifamily apartment investing via syndication. And now, your hosts, former NFL fullback Brian Leonard and Anthony Scandariato.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Discovering Multifamily Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Scandariato with Redfin Properties. And today we have a very special guest with us, a good friend of mine, Michael Hamm. Mike is an experienced sales executive with Fidelity National Title Group, which is an interesting topic to talk about on our show. Not many people, they've heard the term title insurance, but they don't really understand what it means. Fidelity National is, for those of you who are not familiar, it's one of the nation's largest group of title companies and insurance underwriters as well. They have a few different brands: Chicago Title, Fidelity, Commonwealth Land Title, which Mike can tell us about, and as well as a sales executive at Fidelity. Mike's the host of the Morning Spotlight podcast. And he's a New Jersey guy, just like myself. He's formed a networking group in New Jersey called Next Generation of New Jersey, which is primarily real estate focused, right? But now it's becoming a little bit more general, young professionals and kind of every industry, connecting. Definitely Mike brings a lot of experience and knowledge to the table, and happy to have him on my show. So welcome, Mike.
Yeah, that was an awesome introduction, and I'm really excited to be here. So hopefully you didn't oversell and I underdeliver, but I'm going to do my best.
It'd be hard. So Mike, so what is title insurance? I deal with it all the time, but for our listeners, what does it mean? You're trying to buy an apartment building. What does title insurance even mean to you?
We'll do title insurance 101, right? So title insurance, because it has the word insurance in it, people always associate it with homeowners insurance, car insurance, life and health insurance, different insurances like that. But title insurance is different than all of those. You know, for those, you're paying like a monthly premium, a yearly premium for anything that's going to happen to you or your car or your house in the future. After, you know, you have ownership of that, whatever happens in the future. Title insurance is a little bit different. Title insurance is a one-time premium that you pay at your closing, and it covers you for everything that has happened to that piece of property in the past. So it's almost like a history lesson on that piece of property, and it protects the investment that you're making in that piece of real estate, whether it's an apartment building, multifamily unit, whatever it is, to make sure that, you know, let's just say whoever owned the piece of property before you take ownership of it hasn't paid taxes and there's a lien on the house. If you don't get title insurance, you don't do your due diligence in going into that. You take ownership of that. We're doing multifamily, so multifamily building. You're on the hook for that. You know what I mean? So there's just different things, you know, like that's a very basic, I mean, an extreme example I always give is fraud. You know, so like if you're buying a piece of property from someone that doesn't actually own it and you don't know that and you don't do the stuff that we do, that's kind of what happens. That's where we come in and we make sure that when you buy that house, buy that multifamily building, buy that office, buy that whatever, that you're protected. So that's a very quick and dirty what title insurance covers, I guess. And I can get into different things if you want me to get into some different stuff.
Sure. So in terms of if you're an operator or owner trying to buy a multifamily building, does the lender force you to get title insurance?
No. Well, let me rephrase that. Yes, the lender 10 times out of 10 will normally be the ones that are requiring you to get title insurance because they want to be protected as well. So usually title insurance is broken down into a loan policy and an owner's policy. The loan policy protects the bank or the lender. The owner's policy protects you, the owner. So I heard that when you asked me the question as whether or not it's like required by law to buy title insurance, like the answer is no, but if you're working with a lender, you're going to wind up getting title insurance.
Now, is there a price difference between lenders and owner's title typically?
It's basically just so the way that we calculate title insurance here in New Jersey and New York, similar, or New York's exactly the same as us. Pennsylvania is very similar. It's all different rates. Every state is its own. They govern the title insurance industry their own way. So some states are regulated rates like us, filed rates, they call them. So the Department of Banking Insurance files the rates, and every company, doesn't matter if you are, I know you said one of the biggest title insurance underwriters in the country. We are the biggest title insurance underwriter in the country. No problem. No problem. But so it doesn't matter if you're a big company like us or a small mom and pop agency anywhere in New Jersey, you're going to have to charge the exact same price for the exact same product, essentially. Really what it comes down to is like the logo at the top. So the way that we calculate the rate
premium,
The premium. Sorry, I just blacked out there for a second. The way we calculate that is based off the fair market value of the property, right? So normally that would be the purchase price, but you have some like weird examples where like a 501c3 is buying a piece of property from a town for a dollar. Obviously we're not going to insure it for a dollar. We're going to insure it for the fair market value of the property. And there's some things that we do, you know, to kind of assist those types of transactions, but normally it's the purchase price. So your insurance will be the amount that you paid for that policy total, right? So you have, and the loan policy is just the percentage of the premium of that total premium, and the owner's policy is the remainder, right? So that it's just split up like that. And then once you have the loan paid off, there's no more need for a loan policy, right? So that total package becomes an owner's policy. And then it's just, it's all it is an owner's policy.
Sure, sure. So I want to give maybe this is an extreme example, but just for an inherited property or, you know, kind of like a probate sale, you know, does the children or whoever the deceased, do they still order a owner's title and lender's title just because they kind of know what they've been dealing with for, you know, however long it may be? Like, do you see exceptions?
I mean, situations like that where like if a parent, you know, passes away and they leave the property to their children or whatever it is, generally, you know, you don't have to get a new owner's policy. You would need to re-record a deed to make sure that the deed is in the right person's name. But that, you know, you don't have to like rebuy title insurance just to make sure that like, you know, your dad wasn't paying his taxes or something. So normally in those situations that doesn't happen.
Got it. Okay. And have you come across any crazy title stories? I've heard, you know, examples where you have more urbanized areas, you have more cases of fraud, and you also have more people claiming, you know, title to the property, and you know, maybe not as much back taxes, but do you see there's a difference between suburban and urban title reports? Like, you know, if you were doing the title on the Empire State Building, I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff on that. Can you kind of explain like the differences between
markets? Yeah. So, I mean, I would imagine like, so we'll just use the example just because you gave it of, you know, if I had the money to buy the Empire State Building, like just by myself, right? The person that I'm buying it from is not just one person, right? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of different entities, a lot of different LLCs and organizations and companies and investors and all that kind of stuff that have a certain ownership stake in that building, right? So when you actually go in and what we do, you know, just like the basic process is we have here in New Jersey, this is the same thing in New York, searchers. So people that go into the county records office and literally pull binders off shelves. If stuff's not electronically filed, and in some counties here in New Jersey, they still don't do e-filing, which is kind of crazy, but it is what it is. So they're literally pulling books off shelves, tracing back the chain of title, who owned it. You know, so then like you have to do different searches. Like, I mean, if your last name is Scandariato, I don't know how many Scandariatos there are in, you know, Morris County, Sussex County, New York County, whatever it is, probably not a lot, right? But if there's a Smith, all of a sudden you have to check every Smith that is somewhat could be possibly related to that. So the more you get into like those bigger type buildings, so that jumping ahead of myself. So once that searcher's done, they send all the stuff to us. We go through all of it and we just create a title report, and then use that title report to create the commitment, and then the commitment becomes the policy at the end of the day, like the title binder. So when you're working in a suburban versus urban type of market, you just like, you wind up coming across different, I think, issues. So I think if you're in an urban market, like let's just take New York City. New York City is just a grid, right? So you have a pretty clear understanding of like where the property starts and stops. You have a pretty clear understanding of like, you know, you could see it. You don't really, I mean, you're going to do a survey most likely, I would guess, but it's not like you need to draw a fence line or anything like that. But then on a urban or a suburban side or even a rural side, you know, I know you're doing stuff in Sussex County, like you have places that have just more land, more space, more whatever. So now you need to do, there's different obstacles that are presented for that. So, you know, I had one example where someone came to me and they had a client that bought a house. Their neighbor had always used that driveway. So like not his driveway, but their driveway. They didn't know this. He would drive up their driveway through their backyard to get to his house. And he had always done it for as long as the prior owner of their house had owned that house. So like 30, 35 years. So it almost comes down to like, you know, you could call that an adverse possession where like you've just been doing it all the time. So that's just what you do. And obviously nothing like that is going to show up in a title report. And I, you know, didn't follow up and didn't find out actually how it happened, but that just creates like that's a title issue. Because, you know, you're giving almost like an easement through your backyard to your neighbor. Sure. You know, so it all, like, there's just a lot of different stuff that comes with urban versus suburban versus rural versus whatever. You know, so it's not just like if there's a lien on the property or fraud or anything like that, but it really comes down to like, you know, we do surveys, we insure the surveys, you know, all those kinds of things that, you know, would, if you're buying a place in an area that has a lot more space, you know, if you have neighbors dragging the fence back and forth in the middle of the night, you know, to make their land a little bit bigger and yours a little bit smaller, and you're just like, what the hell is this? You know, so stuff like that. You know, so there's just like a lot of different types of issues that you run into with those. A very long-winded answer, but I think that answers your question, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was going to ask the question of how do you, as an owner, operator, aspiring owner, operator, whatever it is, you find a property, you put it under contract, looks like a good deal. When do you order the title report, or when can you get some preliminary title reports? Because I've been in situations where the title report told me everything I needed to know about the property from a deed standpoint and what it was restricted based upon, and it just completely blew up the deal. Have I had that report 15 days prior to when I actually received it?
Yep.
I would have saved 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So when do you suggest people to start running the title reports, and how does that work from your company's standpoint, where if you don't close the deal and you run the report, is the buyer still on the hook for fees? How does that work? I'm just curious.
So I got to make sure I say the right things on this one. So you're asking a company question. So basically what I would recommend you doing is if you have doubts about a property or whatever it is, just call a title rep like myself and, or have your attorney do it or have your realtor do it. Excuse me. Whoever is representing you, I guess, put that in air quotes. Or you can do it yourself. Call me or call your title rep and just say, hey, like, do you think you can run a search on, you know, 123 Main Street, right? So, and then we'll go in and we'll do the searches. It's a little bit slower now because of COVID and restrictions on access to the county records office, but it's all public record, right? So we can go in there and give you a title report. But when I say that, not insurance, just a title report. And then if you feel comfortable looking at it and going ahead with it, or if you want your attorney or whoever it is to look at it and go ahead with it, then we already have those searches in-house and we can pretty much use those plus, you know, any updated searches that we need to do, to kind of move forward with that. Title insurance is usually ordered once the contract, the purchase and sale agreement is signed. Generally that, most of my clients are attorneys. I do work with a lot of attorneys, but developers, lenders, different people like that. But most of my clients are attorneys. So usually They'll have the contract signed, then they'll order title insurance, and then we'll just kind of help them through the process. We also have closing services, settlement services, different things like that, escrow services. So, you know, basically we are your point man almost to kind of guide that from contract signing to closing, whenever that closing is.
Got it. Can you talk about underwriting a little bit and how it's important to have that under your umbrella as well? The underwriting process?
Yeah, sure. So basically for us, I mean, we have 5 offices here in New Jersey and around the country. I couldn't even tell you how many offices we have, but the people that are actually like the ones reading the files, I mean, are generally people that have been doing this for a long time. So, I mean, maybe because I don't personally read files and you don't read files, when we read some of this stuff, it is like, it's crazy. Some of the stuff that we get back. Remember, I was talking about pulling the binders off the shelves, different things like that. I mean, some of this stuff is like handwritten in, you know, a different English than you and I speak when we talk to each other from 1875, right? So, but they pretty much know, because they've been doing this so long, like where to find the stuff that they need to actually put in the commitment so that they could send that and put together a proper title policy. You know, so it's important to know that like the people that you are having actually read those searches and put together your policy know what they're doing, because that's what it is, right? So like applications and the searcher, you know, they're important because the ball doesn't start rolling until they do their job. And then the settlement office and the escrow services and all that kind of stuff are important because you need to close the file at some point. But the actual commitment, the title binder that you get, your policy, comes from the work that that underwriter does. So that's kind of, I mean, that's the most important part of the whole process, I would say, because that's your policy.
Sure. Can you talk, you mentioned settlement. What is settlement? What does that mean? Escrow services. What does that mean for our listeners?
So basically, settlement services essentially are like we work with the banks, we work with the attorneys or the, you know, the parties involved to help that thing get closed. So, you know, taking it from, you know, at closing, we will send a closer who kind of quarterbacks that closing at the table and has everybody sign the checks and sending it to different places and making sure everybody gets paid and everybody gets what they're supposed to get. We have other settlement officers that work with the banks, make sure that everything is prepared for that closing. And then on the escrow side, I mean, you have sometimes, you know, commercial transactions. Very rarely do we do it for residential transactions, but commercial transactions where, you know, there needs to be a certain amount of money put in escrow to hold until the end. And we have people that's all they do is escrow work for those transactions. So they make sure, and then they're going to wind up being like the closer of that file once it does actually close. But essentially they're just making sure that they're managing that money, making sure that when they get to closing, it's all prepared, ready to go. So that when, if you're closing on a multifamily building, you want things to go smoothly. So that's essentially if you're using us to make sure that goes smoothly. Some people use their attorney, some people do whatever, but, if you're using us, which a lot of people do, you want to make sure that everything goes the way it's supposed to go. So that's kind of like how that operation works.
Awesome. You have any crazy closing stories?
I mean, there's always like stupid things where, you know, like not me personally, but working with some other people that have been in the industry for a long time and just like hearing like horror stories of like 2 attorneys at a closing table just arguing over stupid stuff, you know, like, you know, 5 cents over here, or, you know, this survey, I don't like how it looks, or, you know, now the bank needs this and they know that it's not allowable. Like a title insurance company can't actually do that for them, but they're like, it's, you know, it could be a bank from a different state that's now coming in and saying like, hey, like we want this. We always do this at closings. It's like, well, this is New Jersey, man. We just do things a little bit differently here sometimes and we can't do that. And then they get to the closing table and they're like, well, we need this in there now. And they're trying to put pressure on and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you see deals die for like the dumbest reasons. I mean, luckily, thank God, none of mine have that's happened to any of mine so far, but just being around people in the industry for that long, you know, 30, 35, 40, sometimes more years, I mean, you just hear like just stupid stuff that just, you're just like, that's so, you know, frivolous and whatever. So nothing too crazy.
Good. And that happens at the closing table too.
Oh yeah. Like literally, like they're sitting, you know, I mean, we're sitting on Zoom here, but if we were across the table from each other, they're just sitting across the table and, you know, like, I don't like you. I don't like you either. And then boom, deal's dead. And you're just like, what happened?
Right. Yep. It does happen. It does happen for sure. So how can people find you, Mike, as we kind of wind down the podcast now? I know you mentioned you got the morning spotlight. What is that all about? Can you talk about that a little bit and your networking group?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 years ago, now 2.5 years ago, because I just lost track of time during the last 5 months of quarantine and a pandemic. But 2.5 years ago, I started a young professionals group on LinkedIn called the Next Generation of New Jersey. And it basically stemmed from the fact that, so when I was saying before how title insurance industry is a very, it's all regulated. So it becomes, just because you're going to get charged the same price for the same product by every company you go to, it becomes very much a relationship and a service business. So if you have good relationships, you're going to get business. If you have good service, you're going to get business. If you don't have one of those or either of those, you're going to struggle a little bit. So when I first started, and that was now 3 years ago, I'm thinking of coming up in maybe like a day on my 3 year anniversary of starting with Fidelity. I came in with really no background in real estate or title insurance. I was not an attorney. I was a college baseball coach. So I really took a complete 180 on my whole career path here. So I've always been an ambitious guy, and I was saying, well, I want to go after the biggest fish that I could find here in the state of New Jersey. So I started going to big law firms and trying to call on big partners at different law firms. And they were all very nice, all took my call. And I still talk to them, some of them sometimes. And I have gotten some work from them. But ultimately, I realized, like, if this was going to be what I was doing, I would need to start focusing on people that are our age, right? So the grow together concept. So what I started to do was I put together this young professionals group called Next Generation of New Jersey, and started running like a couple times, maybe like every few months, running a happy hour in Morristown, which is where I am right now. And, you know, you come, you pay for your own drinks, you talk, you meet some people, you leave, you know. And we wound up, the first group we had 15 people, which I thought was pretty good for a first time out. And then it grew a little bit. And eventually we kind of like built those out, me and a friend of mine, into more real estate focused. Like Next Generation was always a real estate, a hint of real estate, because most people that I was networking with were real estate professionals, but never like just real estate. You know, we had a little bit of wiggle room there. And then we started running these business and brews events, which were real estate focused. So we would, you know, do them a little bit more elaborate, have an open bar, maybe March Madness on TVs, different things like that. And then the Next Generation, though, was still doing its thing, you know, maybe like less frequently, but still we would meet it up, still get the same, you know, basic group of people. And, you know, we had all these different ideas and different plans of what we wanted to do with both groups once we got into 2020. Because now we had built out our network to a good amount. And then boom, COVID, right? So it's all shut down. Like I think you were even coming. We were supposed to have a March Madness party, you know, the first round of March Madness, getting ready for that. And then we canceled the party. Then March Madness, or the NCAA must have saw that we canceled our party, so they just canceled all of March Madness. I'm pretty sure that's how it worked. But yeah, and then next thing you know, like we couldn't do anything. So the first week, you know, I was sitting there and I was like, oh, this is going to be like a couple weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks that we're going to be stuck indoors, and then it's going to blow over, you know, it's not a big deal. And then like after the first week, and we started seeing like the cases jump, deaths jump, you know, like everybody was, it was a scary time, you know, obviously back in March. And, so I was like, well, I guess this isn't really going to be a short-term thing. So, we put together the Next Generation. We, you know, breathed new life into the Next Generation of New Jersey, I guess, and basically pulled it back together, and kind of remobilized both of those groups to start every Tuesday. We ran for, I think it wound up being 13 straight weeks. Every Tuesday night at 5 o'clock, we would have a happy hour, with a lot of different people. You know, most we had in one night was 47, which was fantastic. Obviously over the summer, we've been a little bit, you know, not as consistent, you know, maybe every other week now. And still you don't get as many people, but it was just like a great outlet for people to come and, you know, like pretend that they're actually drinking with people, not just alone in their apartments, like, you know, maybe someone on this call like me. but yeah, I mean, it was great. And it wound up being such a great group because we had a good core of people. Like you were always there, you know, a bunch of other people were always there. And then we would always just like add on, you know, one or two people, and they just, you know, kind of picked up on it. It's very low key, very relaxed. I'm not a big believer in very structured networking. You know, maybe it's because of the industry that I work in. But it's, I think people want to do business with people that they like. And the more that you show who you really are, the more, you know, business you're going to get, the better relationships you're going to develop. So then now we're moving into the spotlight. I was getting a lot of traction on LinkedIn, for the mornings or the next generation of New Jersey, Tuesday night events. And almost like as like a thank you, I guess, or as like a way to kind of make sure that my face, you know, for better or worse, stayed out in front of everybody, because that's what my job is and I can't do that right now, I was like, well, maybe I can take my traction that I'm getting already, take the people that I've been networking with for a while, and just do like a 5-minute spot with all these people. So I started doing that. And basically what it would be, you did one, I think you were like second week. You know, you come on, you say, you talk about yourself, you talk about your company, you talk about what you're doing with clients, how you're handling the pandemic, different things like that. Really quick stuff. And, you know, I think like the longest video we had was 9, but they really averaged around like 4 minutes. Basically, like you want people to stop and watch it like a digestible video as they're scrolling through LinkedIn. So we did those for 12 weeks in a row, every Monday through Friday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Every morning at 9 a.m. we would post a new one. So it really, like, I thought probably after your second week, I was like, yeah, maybe like one or two more weeks I'll be able to fill. But then people just, they wanted to be on it. And then it honestly got, we were talking about this before we got on, hard to have so much content and so many people and so, you know, the time and effort that it took to put the videos together, edit them, because all that stuff I was doing myself. I have no assistant. I live alone. So it's just me. You know, I'm, you know, head chef and chief bottle washer over here for the morning spotlight. And I wanted to try to be a little bit more focused into what I do. So maybe not title insurance per se, but more of a real estate focused. So that's why I started transitioning the LinkedIn videos into what the morning spotlight is now, which is just your more traditional podcast like Discovering Multifamily. Basically what we do is every Tuesday, we have a panel of experts. You know, you were on with us last week, talking about multifamily. And what we do is we just talk about a different topic in the real estate industry. So a lot of the people that come on are people that we had do the videos. They're, you know, clients of mine, they're people in the industry that I respect. And then, Thursdays we do some cool different things. Sometimes if I have an episode to post, so we did a health and fitness episode. We did a mental health episode. We had one of the original members of the first ever Jamaican bobsled team in the Olympics. We had him on. We had a mental skills coach for the Philadelphia Phillies. So just like different things, because you know what? It's my show. So I'm going to do whatever I want. So, but Tuesdays we're going to stay moving forward with those, with that real estate stuff. So you can follow us on Instagram at the Morning Spotlight. You can go to anywhere that you listen to your podcasts. So we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Google, we're on all the other ones that I'd never even knew existed until I started podcasting. Yeah, you can go back, and we have, I don't know how many episodes so far, but it's been going really well. It's a lot of fun. And the panels that we've had on there have been fantastic, and very informative and very, you know, good groups of people. So not only is it, informative, it's also engaging and fun to listen to, at least in my opinion, but I'm biased because it's mine.
No, exactly. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
That's really great. So I think you told, I was going to ask, you know, how people can find you, but
yeah,
I think people know how to find you, for the most part, right? Morning Spotlight.
Yeah. Morning Spotlight. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn. You know, you could email me on my work email, which is michael.ham@ctt.com. You could even email me at themorningspotlight@gmail.com. I'll answer to both title questions or spotlight questions or whatever kind of questions you got. You know, happy to talk to anybody, really. I mean, you know that. Like, I'm not a shy person, so bring it on. And I think I did a pretty good job making title insurance maybe sound somewhat interesting. I was going to tell your listeners, like, buckle up. We're doing title insurance today.
Well, you know? I'm going to leave it to the viewers to decide that.
I hope so. Yeah.
They'll have to leave a comment on the video.
Yeah.
But, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you here. Definitely learned a lot, even though I've been exposed to title already. Yeah. And hope our listeners here learn from Mike as well. Definitely check out Mike's content, because he's putting out content pretty much every day from what he's been saying. And he has some really good guest speakers on there. You know, so definitely get your education on. And, you know, for any title needs, you know, reach out to Mike as well. I'm going to have Mike's contact information in the comment section on the iTunes description, and as well as on all our social media platforms, so you can reach out to Mike directly. So, Mike, thanks again for coming on, and hope to have you on again soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. This was fun.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one.